Hello, everyone. I'm Nora Baldner. This is QU, a student podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. We are in Studio Q at North Campus today. On today's show, I have Taryn Sargent and Gage Evans. And I'm filling in for Sam Huff, who is not here today, but we're going to talk about some of the stories that both Taryn and Gage have been working on this week. And the first one, I'm interested in both of them, but I'm super interested in Taryn's story because it's new, it's crazy, it's going to change the way we teach, it's going to change the way we do assignments at Quincy University, and quite frankly, at every university probably in the world. We're talking about ChatGPT, and we had an experience with it yesterday that I'm going to let Taryn tell you about. But Taryn, can you tell me first, just for our listeners who maybe don't know yet, what is ChatGPT? What have you found out in your research for this story?
So actually, I did not originally just see it online. Actually, it was a professor that brought it to my attention. And so I was like, what is this app that he's telling us not to use? And that's the reason why I was like, what is ChatGPT? Well, come to find out, ChatGPT is an AI program by OpenAI. And this is their second launch of a program that's kind of like in the ballpark of using AI to help with schoolwork. And it pretty much writes your essays for you. It goes through and looks through all the internet, uses its artificial intelligence, obviously, and then goes and writes it. And actually, it's very interesting. We did play around with it a little bit. A student actually had access to it. It did kind of drop off. It had a little bit of technical issues. So we weren't able to play around with it in the beginning of the week. But we were able to. It seems like it's back up and running as of yesterday. And we were able to kind of type in a couple questions. Like the student asked, can you write a paragraph about blackjack? And the computer went and sat there and literally wrote it almost like it was typing. It was like you type in a search bar the question, ask what it's doing, and then it goes to write, and it sounds very professional. And honestly, I was really struck by the kind of writing style, because honestly, when you were first reading a couple paragraphs, you're like, oh, you could see kind of this is kind of a computer. But then at the end, it kind of acted more human-like, because it was kind of wrapping it up and using adjectives that are usually had a more positive connotation, which computers usually don't do. So I feel like students can definitely pass it off as their own work. So I think that's going to be very interesting. I did also talk with Blaine Hill, and I'll just play a little soundbite from him, but he was also interested in how this is going to be integrated into our curriculum. This is soundbite from Blaine Hill, and he's a part of our IT tech services.
Processing is very cool, but it's also very trendy right now, and there was a very rapid series of upgrades, of advancement for it. I would suspect that it's going to fall out of the news as that development suddenly slows down, but it's not going away.
So as you heard from him and everyone that I talked to and discussed the topic with, everyone agreed that ChatGPT is not going away. AI is just going to continue to evolve, and hopefully we can see professors integrate that into their curriculum, because it's not going to be a good idea to ignore that. Now we no longer really have to truly write our essays for ourselves.
So let's go back to the professor who told you not to use it in a class. What type of class? Is it a class where you would write a research paper, an essay?
So that one, I'm not going to say the professor.
No, that's fine.
Or it was a history class, and it was for J-term, so that's a strictly all the way online class. And for the final, you had to write a final essay, and you had to cover certain topics from a particular book. Now, this is where it kind of gets into it of I could see how ChatGPT could maybe not do that, because obviously, if a book is not all the way online, ChatGPT would not probably be able to read it, because I do not think it has access to paid programs. So, and the professor also asked for specific subjects from that book to be covered in the essay. So that also kind of brings up a little bit of a problem. But let's say you're in a regular history class, a J-term, which is all the way online, and the professor never sees you face to face. obviously you wouldn't have that difference of the person talking knows what they're talking about. And then when I get their essays, they also know what they're talking about versus like someone who like you could have ChatGPT write your essay and they'd be like, wow, very intelligent, very nice. And then they see you in person. They're like, oh, something's not adding up. So I feel like ChatGPT is kind of that bridge, especially as we see like more college programs go online, especially after COVID. So ChatGPT, especially for those online courses, is going to be really dangerous because it can write those short assignments, those short paragraphs, and it can also write those essays. So you really wouldn't have to do much if the professor does not make the prompt very specific.
So I do, you're correct. I know that it can't access anything behind a paywall, right? But that's today. So, you know, who knows in the future, because ChatGPT is constantly evolving. They're, you know, constantly working on it. Also, as of either today or last week anyway, it really doesn't go past 2021, correct? It's really just focused on 2021 or earlier. So anything written or information changed in 2022 might not show up in ChatGPT. But here's my real question. This is just a tool. It's just a website, correct? It is going to change a lot of things. And I know educators are exploring it, worried about it. How are we going to really make sure that students learn? Because you can get through school by buying papers, by cheating, by plagiarizing. If you're not caught. Now, if you're caught, there are consequences. But on a broader, and Gage, I'll bring you into this question as well. On a broader question, clearly, don't call anyone out, but how rampant is cheating in college classrooms? And have you seen it? Have you experienced it? Is ChatGPT just another tool that students can use to skirt some of the assignments, really?
I was kind of thinking the same thing. It's almost like these universities and higher level educations are almost starting to almost promote it because it's the system's just getting bigger than them. So it's like the old phrase or saying, like, if you can't beat them, join them almost. But what I've noticed in my classrooms and whatnot, like I've heard stories, like I don't sit next to the people when they write stories or anything like that. I've heard about people that use it and whatnot. And for like lower 100 level or 200 level classes, it seems to like work overall better. But I think if you had to write like a senior thesis or something very broad and big, I think that system would probably struggle in my mind a bit more than not.
I definitely see where he's coming from because I definitely saw that the program has like a tendency to be pretty specific. And I don't know if it, and I know for a fact that it cannot cover like moral things. So like ethics itself, like as a field, ChatGPT would not be able to cover for you. So if your professor asked for your opinion, ChatGPT would not be able to come up with an opinion for you. But what I see, I think that there's ChatGPT is one app out of many apps that has already existed that students have been using for years, especially growing into our generation. It's like I've had a Chromebook since middle school. So I've grown up with the internet and especially in education. So I think that it's just one app to the repertoire that students can use whenever they go and have issues with their homework. And it's not simple enough that it just comes to our mind. Then we just pull up an app. And I kind of go over that in my article that's going to be released. And there's multiple apps like Chegg, Quizlet, where technically, like, I've had different classes where people have come to me for science classes. Obviously, I'm a comm major, so I didn't take many science classes. But science, and especially math, there's usually one right answer. It's usually not an opinion-based. So when you get into that type of those types of subjects, I think that's where ChatGPT is really going to shine because there's only one right answer, and ChatGPT is going to be able to take that one right answer and explode it into 2,000 words. And I feel like that's what's really going to – those are the subjects that's really going to benefit from ChatGPT. And I definitely think that that ChatGPT is good for essays, but still there are the other apps like Mathway and that kind of stuff where you can just take a picture of your problem and it'll come up with the answer. I feel like there is always going to be stuff that exists that can just do that type of stuff for you. So
Well, Gage, I like what you said. You know, if you can't beat them, join them. I said to Taryn for this, when she was working on this story, ask ChatGPT to write your story for you for QU Media. Let's do a comparison. What does it look like? I feel, in talking with my own colleagues, I feel a little spoiled because right now, this is an assignment. ChatGPT can't do a podcast. So I feel a little bit lucky in my assignments are pretty specific. They're on campus. You're talking with other people. You're researching stories. You can't really do our kind of work in a library. I mean, you can do stories in the library, but you know what I'm saying.
There's a humanistic value to this that technology can't replace, per se.
Huge, right? You actually physically have to speak with human beings. But that said, you know, think about when the calculator came out and math professors were ballistic. Like, no, they need to be able to solve a math problem on paper or in their head, right? Is this similar? Do you feel like this ChatGPT is to writing as calculators were to math, solving math problems?
Overall, yeah. It's like kind of the same problem, but in my mind, that's like comparing an apple to an orange with just the how advanced this is. But like dumbing it down is just kind of like a simile analogy. I certainly agree with that, yeah. There's always going to be ever-expanding technology just paving the way in classrooms, workplaces, anything like that that people are going to disagree with, but they can disagree all they want if it hits the ground running, just kind of widespreads overall and gets used by many. That's just bigger corporation stuff, and I don't think there's going to be much to be able to stop it.
Do you think we're going to see more of a rise of the creative class? So that's been, you know, kind of the next iteration of evolution is the rise of the creative class. Performers and artists and musicians and people who create something from seemingly nothing. If calculators can do the math for us, if ChatGPT can write books and essays and, you know, write manuals for workplaces, I mean, the possibilities are endless. Do you think we're going to see more of the, I don't know, the creative class, the influencer class, the personality, you know, is there, what's next after this?
I think ChatGPT is the death of English busy work, just like how the calculator was the death of math busy work. ChatGPT is going to do the stuff that people aren't going to do in their actual day-to-day lives when they're done with school. In math class, I'm not going to do like X, Y, like substitute. I'm not going to do that.
Algebra, geometry.
Yeah, I'm not going to do
trigonometry.
That.
Trigonometry.
I'm not going to try to figure out, the area, unless I'm a carpenter. I'm not going to think of, let me try to figure out the area of this and that. And I'm not going to do that. Even if you want to like replace your furniture, now IKEA has an app where you can scan the area and see if it fits. So my thing is like calculators and ChatGPT, honestly, take the busy work out of it. Like to me, English professors, when they give you like those, when they give you a prompt that is so general that you just, it's just almost busy work, that's what ChatGPT can accomplish. And so I feel like it puts more pressure on the professors. Because you have now, they're really not going to be able to look for a right answer in the essay. They're going to have to actually read the essay and see like the actual, and that's going to be interesting to see how that gets graded. Because if you're doing everything creative, how do you determine who gets an A and who gets a B if it's not a right answer? So I feel like it's going to be interesting to see how that works with grading. But I think for in the long run, as well as getting like your money out of college, I think it's a good thing. Because I believe you should be able to develop yourself and your own personal skills and not, can I open this book? Am I going to have enough time to read this book in between me going to work? And can I write this busy work essay that looks really quite similar to everyone else's and it's the same information?
Back to your point with the grading and whatnot, that's the one thing I kind of wonder about this whole ChatGPT thing is the way now these papers are automatically getting written. When is the point that they're going to be automatically graded?
Let's invent that app. Something that automatically grades. I'm on board with that for sure.
To where like something that can pick up plagiarism. There's already things out there like Turnitin.com where students have to submit their pieces of work through that to check for plagiarism and similarity and everything like that and making sure they just overall cite things correctly. But I feel like it's just going to be like kind of a technological revolving door for, as of now, higher education writing, and then it's just going to work lower and lower as it becomes more and more accessible throughout the schooling systems.
Well, so there was a student from maybe Princeton, I think, who developed some kind of app that could tell you if it was generated on ChatGPT. But, you know, the success rate of that was like in the 80s, maybe 70-80% or something. And then ChatGPT came out with some way to understand or to prove that it was something was written by ChatGPT. Okay, I kind of still go back to what both of you are saying. You know, you've got to either embrace it or it's a losing fight to try to ban this or to try to not use it. I think that's the first reaction to it, you know, because our assignments are built in a certain way. And we've been doing this for many years. And so it is hard to turn that train around in any kind of fast manner. But I will assure you that there are ways to grade creative work. Migrating, you guys know my grading system. So I can grade on mechanics, you know, is the grammar correct? Is the punctuation correct? Are you following AP style? I can grade on, did you match your story, or does your story have elements of journalism, like timeliness and conflict and, you know, that sort of thing. So I still think you can find ways to grade creative, but I do appreciate what you're saying, Taryn, when it's like, if it does genuinely come from someone's creative spirit, how do you put a metric on that? And that's something that we have to figure out. You know, that's something that we're going to have to do. But you could talk to a music professor, you could talk to an art professor, and they could say, oh, I can grade it. I can grade it. There's not a right answer, but there's a good answer, and then there's a better answer, and then there's an even better answer. So there's that rubric is, I don't know, fluid, debatable, absolutely. But it's going to be so fascinating to see Gage going into younger and younger grades. You know, what if elementary, what if junior high, what if, you know, what if they figured out how to use this? You
have fifth graders turning in automated papers, like it's...
What does that say for the intellect of our society as a whole?
I think that people think about it like that and think, oh, it's the death of learning. But honestly, if we look at like academic papers, ChatGPT cannot come up with academic papers, as in like publishing new theories and doing stuff like that. Yeah. In the spirit of learning, you should always be learning something new. So ChatGPT, as you said, can only go to 2021. ChatGPT can't make up new information, can't go out there and research new things, can't come up with new theories of thought. ChatGPT can't do that. It can regurgitate it, which to me is making people, ChatGPT is going to make people go out and have to learn new things, because you can't regurgitate what is already there on the internet. And that's what's going to set people apart of, I've always just been regurgitating information and now ChatGPT can do that. Or are you in a field, or are you that person in that field that's going and learning new things, making new thoughts, expanding upon them? So ChatGPT just creates a divide of the people who just want to get the degree and the people who actually want to learn. So I think that's what ChatGPT is really going to be in the future.
Okay, Professor Sargent, I'm going to call you out and tell everyone that your goal is to teach at some point, right? You're going to go to grad school, become a professor. I couldn't have said it better myself. I think you just nailed it on the head. That's excellent interpretation of, yeah, it's just regurgitation, but where's the original thought, original content?
Yeah, so I definitely think that it's gonna force people, it's either people are A, gonna get degrees like based off ChatGPT, but then if you think about it, you can't just ChatGPT your way into the workplace. But I think that goes along with, my senior thesis, which is like goes into the hand of, you got people now in the future generations with being able to use social media and technology where they don't have the actual skills, but they can front and act like they have actual skills to be able to get into those jobs. And when they get there, they don't know what they're going to do. So I think that's going to create a new job crisis on the economic side, because there's going to be a lot of people that ChatGPT'd their way through college. And when they get there, it's going to be interesting.
Well, we've already had, to some extent, We've had people buy their papers and borrow their papers and cheat on exams through school. They don't tend to last too long in the workforce, right? They have to kind of regroup and do something different or find a different avenue. But yeah, that's interesting. So what does that say to, you know, higher ed is going to have to really take a hard look at how we are doing things and how we are grading and how, you know, what is the end goal here? Because it is learning. You're absolutely correct. But have we been going about it in an antiquated way? And is it on us to be creative and change it? Which actually, I'm really glad you're going to go to grad school, Taryn, because can you reinvent higher ed, please? Can you figure out, you know, how to get the original experience back? I think that's fascinating.
I don't know. I also think that the grade system is also interesting. And that's why I think ChatGPT is really going to shake things up. But I, like, for me, like, ABC should not define you. If you have enough love for, like, the subject that you're trying to, like, research, it shouldn't be your professor doesn't understand, even though other people, maybe another person could understand that, but the professor doesn't like where you're going and your thought, and so you get a C, and then you don't get accepted into a further school or don't get a good job. I feel like it's going to reinvent society and the way we think about learning. So
Gage, your passion, your plan for your future involves being creative and being a personality and doing a job that is really based on your performance. So Do you think that, you know, are you even worried about ChatGPT, or do you think that it's going to impact you at all?
I mean, technology is like prevalent in sports as is now, but back to the whole like humanistic point and value of it, I don't see a system like ChatGPT being able to, like, in my mind at least, you guys might have some ideas and I'd be happy to hear them, but just kind of replacing the humanistic value of sports to where that we haven't already done. Like a few examples, the one that is most crazy to me is tennis. When that ball comes down on the line and that ball just has to touch a fraction of the white line on the tennis courts, whether it's single or doubles and whatever rules they're playing in the court boundaries, it almost seems like they have that little animation graphic of where it hit within 5 to 10 seconds of the live play happening, and they can make the call. The line judge can make the call right then and there if they have to review it of whether it's in and out. That one boggles me the most. The one that's highly debated that is kind of becoming more prevalent as time moves on is automated umpires in baseball, because there's like a certain percentage error. Umpires are judged based off of their performance, and it's kind of over. It's like just I can't quite explain the rating system. I've just seen the like statistics and graphics of it after like certain games where there's been like 7 blown calls and the ref only receives like a 73% like overall strike efficiency and like rating and stuff like that. But
how do they automate that?
I'd imagine just something with a type of laser or something, boundaries, basically able to size it in the batter's box. Because that's the other thing, too, is you have players in the league like Jose Altuve, who's 5'9". Then and on the flip side of the inning, you can have 6'7" Aaron Judge come up to the plate. So you can't just take like a single framework of a strike zone and copy and paste it in there.
Look at their physique and adjust accordingly, right?
That's what I almost wonder, if it would go into like the jersey basically and use like reflectors or something like that and basically kind of tagline the boundaries, and then the umpire just overall incorporating him and where he stands. I still think they should keep like a human umpire back there and not just go robotic animated. But I wouldn't mind the kind of way it's like the review system in tennis, to where there's that little backup system in place. So that way if like managers, because I've seen on like YouTube and stuff, like watch different compilations and stuff, and some of them are pretty funny because those managers get fired up and are like irate over some calls, just all the ejections and stuff. But like, there's challenges in basketball, like professionally, there's challenges in the NFL professionally, but there really isn't on any strike calls. There are on base running calls in the MLB, but strike calls, the guy behind the plate, whatever he says goes, no matter what, in the end, as of right now.
Well, it's a slippery slope because you replace the umpires, you're going to replace the pitcher, you're going to replace the catcher.
Exactly.
I mean, are we going to, is this Westworld here?
When will it stop?
Yeah, when did we kind of lose integrity in humans doing their role? I mean, track has seen a couple of technological advances as well. You would usually think that no way, but for like jumping and for throwing, you know, we used to be, you just get out your old fashioned tape measure, and humans used to rely that they're not lying to you, that their eyes work and that they're going to say out the right number for distance you jumped or the distance that was thrown. But now they use lasers. So now there's lasers to mark where there's a disturbance in the sand. Now, there are people, though, that watch over those lasers or go to move something that is that laser to the spot where they see. So that's a little bit different than what you were saying. But still, I see that they're slowly starting to go away from human beings. And to me, that's really sad because my sport, track, has a lot of officials, and we place a lot of our trust into officials. And I just can't imagine the sport without them. And I think that I agree with Gage that you should have a human being there, even if the computer is still doing the job. Because I don't know much about baseball, but let's say something fishy goes on with people that's not necessarily just hitting the ball. Like, what if something is said? What does a robot do then? What if a player jumps out of, like, the, I don't even know what it's called, where they sit, and goes and runs over and tries to hit the other one? There's no person to be like, blow their whistle. The robot's not going to blow the whistle. So I don't know. There's some things that the robots can do, and there's some things that, like, can't.
Fascinating. So that's kind of a nice segue into our next topic. So Gage, as our listeners can clearly, obviously hear, has a broadcast voice and has a great career coming ahead of him. So you were working on a really fun story this week about day in the life of a sports broadcaster, especially for the GLVCSN, which is the league's streaming service. So it's the sports network of the GLVC. We have a unique opportunity here at QU that students get to broadcast those games on the GLVCSN. So tell us about the day in a life. And I know there's a lot going on, but what's the best part of a day of a life of a GLVCSN broadcaster?
Oh, the game action, by far. Like, if it's just mind-boggling to me that people, like, kind of, like, granted, kind of pumping the tires on the overall broadcasting voice there and whatnot, but to be able to have my name there, like, overall, like, it's kind of the little kid's dream. Like, but you play in the backyard, you're playing with a wiffle ball bat with your buddies or whatever, it's like bottom of the ninth, two outs, bases loaded, 3-2 count, walk-off home run, but rather than hitting the ball, I'm kind of making the call for it. So that's actually a good segue into the clip that I have pulled up here as a little audio soundbite. It was, I don't remember the exact date because I didn't screen record it on the day of the game, but it was when Quincy University took down Lewis University in men's basketball by a total score of 71-69. Zion Richardson made the game-winning layup with just under 2 seconds to go left in the game, so I'll let this one play out here and try not to also, like, destroy everyone's headphones because I got into this one.
Clock is running. Hawkins barking some orders. Moves it over to Coakley.
10 seconds left.
The bench is vibrating here at Pepsi Arena. Foster back to Hardman. Dribble drive. Gets underneath. Good!
Oh, good!
Good! He gets the layup to fall! He puts socks in by two!
But just overall moments like that, like, you can't even imagine that. You're going through your pregame show stuff, highlighting players, everything like that, talking about what, just between you and your color analyst, what you think the coaches are saying to their players, like certain keys to success for the game. Like, you're not sitting there at the start going, oh, I got the script. The Hawks are going to win by two on a game-winning layup, so make sure you stay tuned. It's just overall, like, and just I have a lot of fun with it, too. I actually do have another soundbite. This one, I'm real good with one-liners, I guess you could say. So just keeping like an overall, like just personality aspect into it. I like to have a lot of fun with this job, and I'm glad and lucky for what I'm able to do, what I do here in just college, even, and just getting my toes in the water and all the different sports I called. But this was after. This is another men's basketball clip against Missouri S&T Miners a couple weeks later. The Hawks ended up, unfortunately, losing this game. But there was a funny little moment towards the end of the second half when a player went for a layup, got hard fouled, and then they had to – one of the guys went to, like, inbound the ball afterwards and had to bring out the, like, towel to wipe up the sweat and whatnot. I'll let this one play out.
Miners lead down to five. Got a little sweat towel action here below the hoop. Keeping these players safe. Hate to see an injury come with that.
Good form here by the referee, too.
I think he wipes back to front or front to back.
I don't know how to answer that one.
I don't know if there is a way to answer that one, Ryan.
I think he was more on the side just...
But it's just, it's stuff
like that. A little
humor. Like yeah.
A little humor in the, while you're waiting for the play to, the action to get back
yeah.
on.
Yeah. I like to just kind of have like my personality tie into it too overall. So just the way I talk and enthusiasm and everything like that. But yeah, it's a great opportunity that I'm able to do through the school. So just like the game action, I love calling the games. The homework behind it doesn't even feel like homework. It's just the overall preparation work, like I talked about in the game prep, of just kind of highlighting certain statistics, whether a player's leading in a certain category in the conference or something like that, or just even previewing the season and all. The best opportunity I've been presented with so far in this early career of sports broadcasting was this past fall, when the Quincy women's volleyball team got the opportunity to host the Midwest Regional Tournament. They unfortunately ended up getting bounced out in the second round, but to be able to call, it was that first day was busy. Calling four games back to back to back to back, that was grueling. It kind of set the stage for, like, you got to be on your stuff, and there's no time, like, to – sit there between games and like write scripts, not that I'd like use scripts or anything, but just write like overall game notes and everything like that.
So here's an interesting thought. That's where you could use ChatGPT. And I think that's a legitimate
yeah, it very
use
well
for
could.
It because you're searching a lot of websites, you're trying to find a lot of background information on the players, the rosters, the schools, the previous history of the matchups. I mean, I can't think of a reason that wouldn't be okay because it's not, you're not turning it in. It's not like
it's... for my own personal use.
Exactly. And yeah.
Whether the wordage or verbiage on it, no matter what, I can change it in the end. The one thing I wonder is, can it read like PDF documents, like breakdown statistic sheets? Or is it just like article based?
Right. Good question.
Now, what I do think for ChatGPT, which would be interesting, if you recorded and let's say you printed out a version, you put it on the internet, I think ChatGPT would write an amazing story of a game recap because it would have access to all the statistics from all the different sites and it would have access to what, like, for example, what you said, if you were to publish that, like, online, like in a Word format. I do not think it processes videos, so I don't think it would have that capability. But if you did like closed caption and then like somewhere published that, your closed caption document would be somewhere and ChatGPT would be able to read that.
So the Associated Press several years ago already automated score reporting, and the industry, you know, didn't really like that because technically that's taking jobs away from human beings. So that wasn't very popular. But There's also an argument where there were a lot of games not being reported because there were no humans to actually do that. So we've started to see, you know, this automated reporting in news a little bit. Getting rid of that human witness, though, is hopefully never happens. But I think there are positive uses for ChatGPT. I think it'd be interesting, Gage, if you experimented with that a little bit and did some game research and just see how it compares to what you would have normally done.
Yeah, right. Write my own and then just kind of let the automated program do its own work and just compare contrasts. Yeah, that might not be a bad idea.
Make sure it's correct. I mean, we still have to correct the, or at least make sure that the information is correct. Just, and true.
If it can't read like statistics sheets or like PDF breakdowns or anything like that, like certain websites, like I know NCAA.com, they have all the statistics for every level, like every division level of sports around the country. But the main thing I think it would pick up on is kind of like what our main SID, Max Bennett, does, how he writes his post-game recaps and highlights whether someone got like a certain amount of like in a certain or acquired a certain amount of a statistic to where it was like their career best or a team best or a best since this year, like stuff like that. I'm sure it could pick up on that a lot easier than it could like reading a spreadsheet full of like overall statistics.
We'll have to get back onto ChatGPT and say, can you read PDFs? Can you scrub information from spreadsheets?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Might be questioning too much. It might break down again.
Well, that was interesting. I wonder if it was every educator was trying to get on. You know what? It's been there. It's been hanging around. And then all of a sudden it got into the trade magazines and the trade newsletters and that sort of thing about, hey, do you guys know about this, educators? And so I went on immediately trying to get an account and trying to play around with it. And it said, what did it say? We're at capacity. Capacity, right? But I got on yesterday, so I think they're okay. Yeah, you played around with it.
We will see if it stays up. So hopefully they do not try to go in with another update and then go down for a couple days. Because as I said, it's ever learning. And if you shut it down, I don't think it's ever learning when it's down. So
yeah, interesting. It's something to watch, definitely, for sure. Okay, so do you guys have an idea of what you're doing next? I don't know that we've had our editorial meeting about it yet, but any stories on the horizon, anything for this semester that you're looking at?
In specific?
I do know that I'm going to ask you to do a podcast on your senior thesis, so that would be you and Sam are doing that, right? Maybe we can get Ashley to come back too, have our communication graduates talk about all the work that you've done. It's taken two semesters to write your thesis for graduation, so that'll be interesting. That's for you next year, right, Gage?
Yep.
Yeah. And then maybe you'll come up with a brand new communication theory, Professor Sargent, and get published. And you'll turn on your TV at home, and Gage will be on ESPN. And you guys will maybe think of me and QU and say, oh, we should give her an email, right?
Maybe donate some money.
Hey, that would be lovely. We can call this the Sargent Evans Podcast Studio instead of the Q Studio, right? You heard it here, everyone.
Yep.
We've got a commitment for several years from now to rename the podcast studio. Well, I want to thank Taryn Sargent and Gage Evans for being here. And I want to thank you for listening to QU. I'm Nora Baldner. I am the Assistant Professor of Communication here at QU. And it's always a pleasure to speak with students because they have the best ideas and they can see into the future when some of us just can't do that anymore. This has been a production of the QU Media Podcast Network. I appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next time.